Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
All right. Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. And this is part of a special series that we're doing as part of the Female Empowerment Series. I am your host, Angela Alberti, and I get to sit down with Lisa Williams today. I'm so excited about this episode, a Houstonian as well. And we're going to be diving into so many things. Really the blueprint behind the entire contingent workforce program. Lisa, can you give the audience a little bit of a background on yourself, please?
Sure, Angela, and thank you to you and your team for inviting me today. I am equally excited and always thrilled when someone wants to hear something about what I have to say. But the world of work, right? So yes, I am Lisa Williams. I am the Contract Labor Strategy Director at Dow at Chemical, Dow Inc. now, and we are a leading provider of material science solutions to the world. So we have we are a global organization with about 36,000 employees and about $50 billion in annual revenue.
Wow.
And so we're a pretty big organization, and this year celebrating our 125th anniversary. And not many companies stay around that long. So that certainly gives you an indication of the kind of company we are. And so in this role, I have been tasked with leading a cross-functional team fully dedicated to developing a new global strategy for all of the contract labor we have in Dow, also a governance program and implementation model. And as I mentioned, that strategy will cover tens of thousands of contract laborers across the globe to the tune of a few billion dollars in spend. So it's a pretty big program.
And my gosh, this is why I start to geek out and get so excited about some of the topics that we want to cover and address, because you really are looking at this from a high level, kind of walking away from the traditional segmented approach that's been consistent within the CWP program management part of what we're doing. But before we hop into some of those conversations, I'd like to take a step back and kind of get under the covers, if you will, of your whole career trajectory. I think it's important for the audience to know your background and how that's really elevated itself through, you know, Dow and of course, you know, this huge company, which probably most Americans have heard of. But can you give us a little bit of a timeline of your background?
Sure. I graduated from Prairie View A&M University here in Texas with a bachelor's in mechanical engineering, but knew that I probably wouldn't be an engineer my entire career. And so I went on to Penn State University to receive a master's in manufacturing management because I was looking for something that would allow me to get a little bit more business exposure to all of the design and engineering construction aspects, but as well, also learn about the bigger world. And so that master's in manufacturing management degree also had an aspect of supply chain to it. Mm-hmm. So starting my career at Dow as a design and construction engineer for mechanical and process containment equipment systems, I was an actual design engineer, right? So I was in the offices and out in the field designing and specifying equipment for our production facilities. I would work with our procurement team to work with suppliers who provided these pieces of equipment and would bring them to the field and provide instructions on how to properly install and erect them as part of our chemical processes, and then have to go through and walk through the process environment during what we call before we return to operations or turnkey services, so that we've said the construction is complete now and you can turn the plant back on or start it up for the first time, given the scenario. But after I left engineering, I went into the supply chain organization in Dow for about 10 years. I wanted to flex that second degree a little bit. And this is when I really learned about the importance of systems and ecosystems and how functions come together
right,
with their varying expertise areas to realize business goals. And then from that experience in supply chain, I did global planning, regional planning. I moved into the expertise center, which was a really cool experience on how to be an internal consultant in a company when you own subject matter expertise and you own work processes and you're going back into the businesses and other functions and trying to teach them how to use them, leading improvement projects. I received a Six Sigma Black Belt somewhere in there.
Wow,
and
awesome.
A few certifications in supply chain. I've always been a student of systems, right? Big picture systems, because I believe if you understand that, you can learn how to manipulate and maneuver those systems to achieve your business goals and your results, but you have to understand the big picture. Mm-hmm. And so moving through my career a little bit more, I spent the last 7 years in the procurement organization. And so in that role, I got to be a category leader for three different commercial areas in the company. And so starting with the first area, it was in engineering. So I was in procurement. I was a category leader for process containment equipment, which is where I started my design engineering career. So it was really cool for me to be able to talk to the suppliers. Right? It was full circle. I was able to talk to the suppliers about specifications of equipment and high prices they were offering us for unnecessary design features. And needless to say, that gained some credibility for me early in that part of my career. I moved then into a second category leader role for logistics, marine, and terminal leadership. And that was full circle from my supply chain days, right? So I was able to negotiate and lead my team to negotiate with marine service providers, you know, the big vessels, right, that carry our chemicals all around the world, and terminal providers, inspection service providers that support our assets all around the world. And so the third procurement opportunity was back in the equipment space for pipes, valves, and fittings. And so as I traversed those roles, my responsibility of spend would increase, right? So I was responsible for 700 million, 900 million, 1.1 billion. Wow. And so those experiences uniquely equipped me for this challenging opportunity that didn't even exist in the company before I took it last year, where we're being asked now to create this global strategy for contractor management, right? But all of this cross-functional background and expertise I have, all of the linkages and connections and partnerships I've built in the company over the last 24 years of my career, the way that I've learned to engage with leadership and executive leadership and communicate, credibility that I've built with suppliers and other organizations outside of Dow, all of that uniquely built me in my career to be able to take on this role, which is creating a global strategy for, as I said, right, tens of thousands of contract laborers. Wow. That effectively supplement our workforce and in the critical things that we do, and several billion dollars of spend that we use to manage that workforce every year. So it's been it's been very rewarding. I am so glad that I've had the experiences that I've had, because I truly believe they equipped me to be able to lead this team on this part of the journey.
Well, and I think it's also worth noting, you know, you mentioned that Dow has been around for 120 years or, you know, coming up on the anniversary, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. And what's been some of the attributes that lend itself to that success? And it's always at the core of that is the people behind it. And I think you are a testimony to that, because if you look at the trajectory of your career, one of the things that remains consistent is the investment that Dow has made into you, into upskilling, cross-training, new roles. I think that's really a vital part in retaining talent and top talent. I mean, it's almost symbolic to a greater picture here that I'm trying to get to. And in that sheer, can you imagine still being an engineer to this day? No, it's you going into all across all of these different departments and having a support system that lets you flourish into these different areas. So that's, you know, one of the things that I'm hearing when I hear about your story. But now you're in the contingent workforce space and learning how to create a blueprint to simplify this across the board. I imagine it's coming with its challenges. Can you give us what this experience and this new role has been like for you the last year now?
Sure. And it has been an experience. So, and one, again, that I never saw coming in my career. But when the opportunity presented itself, I'm so glad that I was awake and paying attention.
Right.
So our company, first of all, you talked about culture. You know, Dow's ambition is to become the most innovative, inclusive, customer-centric and sustainable material science company in the world, solutions provider.
Right.
So we don't just make chemicals. We're not an old school chemical manufacturer anymore, right? We are truly leveraging the power of science to solve the world's problems. And when a large portion of your workforce, the workforce that you depend on does not directly belong to you, you're trying to accomplish this incredible ambition through partnership and influence, right? And so recognizing where we have to go as a company and how strong all of our partnerships need to be, both inside and outside of Dow, our executive leadership team and our board of directors said, hey, we need to make sure we have an even stronger strategy about how we manage our total workforce, and contract labor management is absolutely a part of that.
Wow.
And so once our executive leadership team and our board of directors coalesced and galvanized on this, this is a part of how we are going to transform Dow for the Dow of the future to find the solutions of the future. We need an uplifted, fortified strategy for contract labor. And we need a team fully dedicated to go and address this for us. Mm-hmm. So the executive leadership is the original sponsor of this program. And from what I'm learning now, a year plus into this whole new contract labor world that I'm seeing, is having your executive leadership not only advocate for you, but literally create the value proposition and then create the roadway for the team to be created, fully committed, and fully supported as you are designing and building the program, as you're learning, as you're growing, as you check in with that sponsorship to make sure you're still aligned with the priorities of the company. I'm learning about so many programs that did not have that. And we started with it. So when the jobs were posted for me and my team members, when you see, this is game changing. This is a once in a lifetime career opportunity, right? To create something for the company that doesn't exist in the form it needs to for the future. So from that aspect, you know, I was taken. This was a no-brainer. Now the competition to get this role was pretty tight. Mm-hmm. And I say that with a lot of you know, recognition and clarity in the talent we have in the company, mm-hmm. And what this opportunity would bring to some people's careers. So I was very humbled to be selected as the person to lead this program and lead the team to go and change the way we work in Dow.
Well, it's pretty amazing to me, and I want to dive into that a little bit further when it comes to the stakeholdership that you guys have had through that. But a couple of things here that I'm walking away with that is Dow recognized that there is a large indirect population of their workers that is somewhat out of their control. And there's some form of standardization that needs to be brought in order considering the growth and the trajectory of contingent work in general, and how that's going to impact your organization. Two, the investment that they're making to have this strategic department developed, knowing that there is folks that are ongoing handling the day-to-day, which is a lot with the volume that you guys have, but knowing that this is so much beyond that, that it needs to have that strategy and that innovation dedicated to it. It really is a valuable asset, but I'd like to peek into more of the support that you guys have had through that process, because you are right. I mean, time and again, we speak to our peers in this industry, and one of the more difficult things to come by is stakeholdership and then the cultural adoption after the stakeholdership, right? Because at the end of the day, we're all human. I mean, we're dealing with humans, we're dealing with emotions, and you need that cultural support and adoption to help get you that point. Can you give us any examples of how that's helped further develop or even accelerate some of the initiative that you guys have pushed for, really what that has reflected for you guys thus far in the department in general?
Yes. So we are a cross-functional team of full-time representatives. So we still work within our given departments. I'm actually assigned to manufacturing and engineering operations. I have team members from human resources, procurement, IT, integrated supply chain, finance, environmental health and safety, right? So legal, I mentioned finance. Yeah. So all of the major functions, right? Research and development, they are all represented on this team.
Wow.
And fully committed to focusing on the strategy and implementation development of this new program. So the functional vice presidents and the business presidents, who are the ultimate leaders of these organizations, are the members of the executive leadership team that I mentioned. And so they have made several announcements about this program very early this year when we were first launched in late 2021. They've come out publicly talking about what we've been chartered to do and what we're going to do. They consistently invite us into their leadership team meetings for dialogue and exposure. To their first level leaders. And their first level leaders now are starting to invite us in to explore more discussion topics, more learning, more guidance with their operational teams. So starting, not having to spend a year building a value proposition for something you know is critically needed. And then having to, you know, put together the sales pitch to navigating your way through the middle and upper middle levels of the organization to finally get to the executives.
Wow.
What I'm learning, it takes some organizations like 3 years just to do that.
Yep.
And understand, we have good contract labor management in Dow in general. It's some better in some pockets than others, but it's not good enough for what we need in the future. Mm-hmm. Right. So so this wasn't like a foreign topic in Dow. It's just recognition of how critical it is to achieving our future goals and objectives. So again, once the executive leadership team, I think our executive leadership team is so well informed. They're so well connected. They have these incredible visions of what Dow will become, because we've been here for 125 years and the way they lead us gives me all the confidence we're going to get there. So them realizing this is what we needed with a fully dedicated team across an entire year to design and build, to be kind of left alone, right? Let us go survey the organization, understand how contract labor works today, design and build it for the future, and then giving us another year to implement the foundation in the company and teach the rest of the company the new way to fish,
wow,
the new way to manage contract labor.
Yeah.
That's 3, 4, 5 years of again, value proposition building and selling that we didn't have to do.
Wow.
And I would say for any program to be remotely successful at the fast pace in which the workforce is changing around us, leadership teams, this is a message to you. Don't waste your people's time. If you know you have a major issue or a great opportunity, like in Dow, we saw this great opportunity, and you know you need a focused team of high-performing employees to go and set it up, build it, and kick it off and get it running, that's the right answer. That's the right answer, because the time you're going to save in doing that versus what we typically do is ask really smart people who already have 10 or 15 things on their plate to go and do this incredibly huge thing and wonder why it's not successful.
Yeah.
Focused, dedicated teams with the advocacy, the resource allocation, the time and commitment, the visibility, and really learning to use that team to be your informed subject matter expert body in the company particularly at some critical times as we're watching the economy change around us, right, and organizations are having to pivot, and they're usually having to pivot with their workforce as a lever. Give the team the time to do what they need to do. The end result will be so much better. The implementation through your organization will be so much more efficient, and the return on investment will be so much bigger.
Boom. You just dropped the mic, Lisa. Thank you so much, because I think you perfectly captured the value of how your team was literally able to skip chapters and get going. The identification of knowing that this needed to be done was framed up and happened, you know, in a matter of a year. Now, what I'd love to ask you is, okay, in a nutshell, what are going to be some of the bigger initiatives that you hope to lend your, you know, your new role into come a year from now, right? And then as a follow-up to that is going and being new into this space, can you walk us through your initial experiences on trying to find resources or even points that would help get you to that North Star, get you to what those goals are going to be from a year from today?
So I would say a year from now, and this is what our team has committed to the organization, a year from now, globally, our leadership teams and their first levels of leadership, which are typically the people leaders or the hiring managers that are somehow directing contract labor work or maybe influencing contract labor work, We will have clearly established global policies and guidelines on the best, most effective way and minimizing risk of managing that contract labor. The teams will have clear work processes to apply in managing that contract labor all the way through the contract labor lifecycle, identifying the need for contract labor, going out to get the right contract labor, bringing that contract labor into the company and very clearly outlining the work that needs to be done and communicating, collaborating, and managing performance seamlessly, and then effectively offboarding that contract labor so they can go on to their next opportunity, whether it's within Dow or somewhere else. And in that process, building a stronger collaboration with our contract labor suppliers so that their contractors have a better contractor experience when working with Dow and are more likely to work with us in alignment with our values and our ambition, and then return to work with us when those opportunities come. We will provide visibility to the contractor population that's better than what we have today. We do have some visibility. Obviously, we have to be able to make the decisions we do and get the work done, but it will be better. We will have better informed discussions and strategies within the organizational teams about the right mix of labor, right? When do some certain roles need to be direct to the company, and what other roles can be contract labor because they're more cyclical, right? And more flexible. Then finally, we will have a very, very robust compliance monitoring and risk management process that now looks at the entire ecosystem. And honestly, those are all the elements you need for a successful contract labor management strategy and model. You have to have all those pieces. So that's what's going to be different, right? And and I say, if I think about the hiring manager closer to the shop floor and the anxiety they feel probably on a weekly basis trying to manage their contract labor, right? They're not HR professionals, so they're not professionals in policy and procedure. They're trying to manage a budget, right? But they're not finance and accounting. They're not controllers, right? They understand the work that needs to be done and the projects they need to support. So all of this great guidance and all of these resources we are now providing in the context of this program and this new ecosystem removes the mystery for them. So they can focus on the job we've hired them for and that we pay them for, the expertise from them that we need. And we're not asking them to serve all these multiple hats in this very, very critical space of labor management.
Wow. You just gave the absolute breakdown of the ingredients for a successful program, global program across the board, from inception to the offboarding, right? One of those areas that I think is really critical through that process is engaging your suppliers and setting the precedent on what are going to be those milestones, those expectations. How can we align with one another to ensure that this partnership is going to meet some of the expectations that we are going to have through that process in the future. So can we dive a little bit further into what are some of those initiatives that you guys want to see out of the suppliers? Is it, you know, suppliers that are advocating for the workers, that are offering the compliance, of course, the compliance aspect of what we do, that are embedded in through the DE&I initiatives that are at the whole of DAO? Can you walk us through what some of those definitions or changes are going to be for what is considered a successful partnership, supplier partnership?
There are two things I'm thinking about right now. So like many companies in, you know, in this in industry, we've had relationships with our suppliers for decades, right? Our contract labor suppliers. And those relationships have been there for decades because we have developed very, very good collaborative working relationships.
Absolutely.
We are, so from a inclusion, diversity, and equity standpoint, again, DAO's values are corely stinted in inclusion, diversity, and equity. Mm-hmm. And we have upfront communicated with our contract, all of our suppliers, contract labor suppliers in this case, if it's a value to us, it needs to be a value to you. And we've found that in most cases, okay, that's a no-brainer. Of course, you know, our values are also steeped in ID&E, right? Yeah. So our supplier diversity program here in DAO has done a really good job in communicating that expectation and outlining those collaborative relationships very specifically so they know what we are expecting. We know what they are also creating and the kinds of values they are operating against and where we are connected and aligned and where we have gaps, we get to explore those gaps and determine what is the best path forward. Mm. I would also say that when you look at the total ecosystem of available labor, the fact that we have fewer individuals going into manufacturing careers and STEM related careers.
Yes.
Across the board. The future of labor and the labor needs we have are a challenge for all organizations, mm-hmm. right? Owner operators like DAO and all of the contract labor supplier companies we need, right, to supplement our workforce. So we are going to have to come together and collaborate on the best way to engage the population to reinforce this talent pipeline because we are depending on each other for existence, right? So that problem is so big. DAO alone or any of the contract laborer providers in any spectrum of that space, no one can answer that problem alone. No. And so I see significant collaboration opportunities in the future. And because we have this new strategy, it makes it easier and clearer for us to communicate and determine how we are going to go on that path. Mm-hmm. But also it opens the door to collaboration across the industry, right? With other owner operators, as well as other contract labor providers so that we create this, you know, this coalition, this population of thought leadership, of best practice sharing, of influencing the marketplace to get these talent pipelines fortified for the benefit of both of us.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. And to hear what some of those initiatives are, and number one, identifying that this is a problem. This is a problem that's lurking around the corner for this type of work. We see what the trending indications are. We need to collaborate, irregardless of where you're coming from or what piece of the puzzle you play within this ecosystem, from enterprise to supplier to the other enterprise competitor. It is to solidify and come together and know that we need to create a funnel of strong candidates Which I'm sure is going to be, you know, have multiple layers to that. But how cool is it that you guys have identified that and have created that unification amongst your supplier profiles to ensure that you are truly on the same page and guiding each other through the common goal? So that's awesome. Now, one of the things I thought was interesting as we were prepping for this is, you know, you're new into the contingent workforce space, but you have a plethora of experience that has landed you to where you are today. So I'm sure just going into this industry is a new awakening, but I'd love for you to just kind of give your take on, you know, what that experience has been like when it comes to finding overarching guidance for an across the board global contingent workforce program as a newcomer within to the space.
Right. Because 14 months ago or 15 months ago, if you would have asked me, or if you would have told me, right, oh, you know, Lisa, your next job is going to be in contract labor strategy development and management, I would have had a quizzical look on my face and sort of, am I dreaming? Right. Because there was nothing in my mind at the time, nothing in my background said I was equipped to go work in contract labor, strategy development or management, until I understood what we were trying to do. And I said, well, I've been supporting the development of strategy and DAO for years, right? And as a student of big picture learning and application, I believe one of my personal superpowers is actually being able to create big picture visibility to a problem or to a situation, so that once you do that, you can better explain the pieces, the people you're engaging better see where they fit and how they contribute, and the solution just gets better, right? Mm-hmm. So I use that when I stepped into this role and I said, well, let me not focus on what I don't know. Let me focus on what I do know. I understand this company as I've been here for over 24 years. I understand the difficult decisions sometimes we have to make in this company to meet our goals and objectives. I've had multiple functional experiences and I have a very, very large network in the organization. So whatever I don't know, I'm sure there's someone I can go and ask for help. Absolutely. And start to build that web of knowledge. Right. That's how I got started, to be very honest, because when I went outside of DAO to try to Google, right, what is contract labor? And I'm expecting, you know, an ecosystem and a model and, you know, here's how you get started in 10 days, right? Or here's what you need to do in your first 90 days of leading a contract labor strategy team. There was so much information out there, even in my attempt to try to pull it together into a big picture, I couldn't. Right. I couldn't do it. And I couldn't do it for probably about 4 or 5 months. Now, we were very fortunate to be working with a consulting partner. So they brought in some big pieces to help. But it wasn't until I started talking to other peers outside of DAO who have either led efforts like this or portions of it. See, that's something else I'm learning about our company. We are the first company that I've learned about. And I've talked to a lot of people and talked to a lot of, you know, partner firms. We are doing the entire contract labor population. Absolutely. All at once.
Yeah.
As we are said, we are establishing the strategy.
Trust
for
me when
all
I say
of
this
it.
Place, this whole industry is segmented.
Very segmented. So when I started talking to others outside of DAO and realizing how segmented it was, I then realized I was going to have to create the big picture, right? What is DAO's contract labor big picture story? And that, and in fact, was my purpose and the purpose of my team. That's what I get it. Okay, this is what we're supposed to do. We have to create the big picture for DAO and identify all the pieces. So once I got that, then I started to go outside and getting information in the pieces to fit the big picture, right? But it would have been really great if I could have gone to maybe a couple of conferences, and there are a couple of conferences out there. They just didn't happen in the timing which I needed them.
Right.
Or, you know, a book or something that would have said, hey, here's your first 90 days, here's your first 6 months, this is the whole ecosystem, here are all the words and the names you're going to hear and the terms and all of that. Here's how to start thinking about it, right? Depending on where you are on the evolution of a contract labor strategy and program, here's what you should think about, right? Here are the opportunities to consider. Here are the pitfalls to beware of, right? It would have just helped to have that. Now, granted, we had executive leadership and advocacy, so that was huge. Now I'm just being an overachiever saying, hey, you know, it would have been great if I could have taken this year, you know, 15-month journey and squeezed it down to 6 months. But also you have to remember, when you think about the size of the organization you are about to impact, most companies choose to implement segmented because that's the part of the organization they can best see, they have the most visibility to, and thereby they will be able to influence and then extract the most value from, right? Okay, yep, that makes sense. But then sometimes your program lose momentum before you can get to the other labor segments where the real dollars are, right? So our approach was, we're just going to do the whole thing all at once.
That is awesome.
And so now, even though we may implement pieces of it at different phases and different speeds, the entire strategy, the overarching strategy is still there. It's established. So as we implement pieces, we still have that global strategy to come back to keep the whole program intact and moving forward.
Wow. That is incredible. And you know, it's amazing to me. I've been in this space for about 10 years. As long as I've graduated school, this is what I know. It's the oversight of contingent labor and management. But it's amazing, you know, when you speak to certain organizations and you can see the varying experiences that one contract person can have if they're sitting in IT out on the field, at corporate, in the warehouse, with this department, with that spend category. I mean, you're night and day, right?
It's night and day.
It is night and day. And I think that you guys are onto something. It's exciting to see how this is going to come to a fruition, which I certainly know you guys have the right leadership and the team on board, just hearing your story and your background and the support team behind everything you guys are doing through this. One of the areas that I think is really critical to talk through is some of the investment that you guys are going to be making in ensuring the compliance and the regulatory aspect of what you guys are doing, in defining, is contract labor a need for that type of role? But all of a sudden I'm a hiring manager and this lady went on maternity leave and now I have to get her fill, but her fill is located in Spain, right? Or, you know, in this remote working world, there is serious regulatory and compliance associated with the fact that we are living and breathing a highly regulated industry. And that industry is the oversight of human capital. And I hate to say it like that because some folks aren't a fan of the term human capital, but they are truly lending to the capital of what is the overarching goals and initiatives of that company, but they're human at the end of the day. And we're dealing with a very regulated industry, which is great and refreshing to hear that you guys are making the investment into that. Can you dive into that a little bit further?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are very excited about the new strategy and program offering a even more centralized one-stop shop for contract labor management and policy of understanding and interpretation globally, right? So if you are a perfect example, you're a hiring manager in North America and you need to temporarily replace someone on your global team in Chennai, right? Or in Bahia Blanca, right? Or in Shanghai, right? Yeah. And you are the global leader of this team, and you're actually responsible for that replacement. And you know that it's a short-term assignment, so it's probably contract labor. But what are the policies, right? What are the local rules and regulations governing contract labor in that particular locale? Right? Region, country, area. I'm in North America. How am I supposed to know that? So of course, I'm depending on my local team members to help interpret some of that, but their core roles are probably not contract labor management. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. one of the things that our program will provide will be a global contract labor policy library, right? Mm-hmm. Which seems, okay, that's a no-brainer, but it's actually harder to achieve than you would think. And so I mentioned earlier, removing the mystery, right? We are very intelligent people that have grown up in a Google and Amazon enabled world. So we know how to find things. We know how to find information, but the information needs to be there in the first place. Yeah. So having all this information easy to find under a strategy and a framework and accessible to the leaders who need it, demystifies what they need to do and how they need to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to make them more effective in getting the labor they need when they need it for whatever time period. And it makes sense, right? Against the budget or against the criticality of the work that needs to be done. It makes sense against whatever, because now I have a strategy to lean on to justify what I'm about to do. And I also have guidance in how to best do it that reduces risk to the company. Absolutely. And applies to all the local laws and regulations of the area in which I'm trying to hire.
Yeah. And I think at the crux of that is giving your folks the access they need readily available to know I need a W-2 equivalent in Peru for 9 months. I need to be aware of X, Y, and Z.
That's right.
In this very on-demand sort of environment that as you mentioned, it's at the touch of a fingertip now, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's pretty cool. It really is like an indexing of countries, and I'm sure engagement types, the IC or the employee within that country, to help them understand the nuances that are so vastly different from maybe their standardized notion of how to process contract payroll in their specified country.
Right.
And imagine though, and I'm thinking out loud here, the upkeep that's required for like an index of that. I mean, we see what's happening every single week, regulatory, even, you know, in the US, what Biden is potentially going to be doing for the IC worker, right? So this is a constant, ever evolving oversight that I'm sure you guys at the end of the day have the investment made into this so that the team can support it and make it realistic.
That is correct. And we have built a program recognizing that it will require ongoing maintenance itself. But when you think about the criticality of what this investment does, it's a mm-hmm. part of our workforce.
Yes.
It's how we get the work done. Mm-hmm. So justifying the investment to keep it in control and returning on that investment as we expect it to, and managing the quality of it, engaging with the critical partnerships of the contract labor supplying companies, those are the things that we can control in this broader labor market ecosystem. All the other things that we can't control, right? The virtual nature of work as it's continuing to evolve, global pandemics and supply chain challenges and, you know, socioeconomic unrest and all the things that introduce variability into our world, we have to respond to all of that in a much more intelligent way. So choosing to invest in maintaining an internal policy library to equip your people to make the best decisions for the company in the moment when things are happening now, that's a small investment considering what you're allowing to activate, the risk that you're reducing, the control that you're gaining, and the return on that investment.
Yeah,
that's how we have to think.
And
right?
Overall, right? The agility.
And the agility is at the core. The agility is demanding all of this other stuff, right?
You can't have it yesterday.
Because we needed it yesterday. You can't have an agile organization whose team members are living in mystery. Mm-hmm. And mystery, when you're not sure about something, you tend to act from a place of fear, which means you're going to continue to do the things the way you've always done them. None of that speaks to innovation and the DAO of the future. So right. we have to change the way people think and act, but we have to create a comfortable environment in which to do that. Mm.
That's awesome. Wow. So many powerful statements, Lisa, in today's episode. I feel re-energized and reinvigorated at some of the initiatives you guys are doing, and really you being at the front of that. It's awesome to see. And I know that we're going to slate for part two of somehow of this episode, because we are coming up on time, which makes me a little bit sad. I've really enjoyed speaking with you and hearing about some of these awesome innovations. And mm-hmm. if I could just recap it, I think you guys are a testimony to the value of stakeholdership, cultural adoption, and recognition of the investment into such a great but exciting challenge in this new phase of DAO's trajectory, knowing that, you know, we're talking about the livelihoods of tens of thousands of contractors out there. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting to see, but I sincerely thank you for being on today's episode, Lisa. And I can't wait to collaborate with you again.
Awesome, Angela. It was great being here. I am so honored by the invitation. Absolutely. And I really do look forward to the next time when we can talk.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I always say this, Lisa, because I'm a firm believer in it. And I think that today's episode is speaks true to that. But there's one thing that we can never get back, and that's time. Mm-hmm. So time is honestly a wonderful gift that we can give to one another. So we thank you for spending some time with us. We thank our listeners as well for spending a few minutes of your busy day with us as well. And know that there's going to be a second part to what we're doing and continuing the conversation with Lisa. But thank you guys all so much for joining us. We'll see you guys on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.